It's Saturday, February 10th, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, our Week in Geek news segment, Mobile Geeks, and your questions.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, during our show, we're going to be doing geek news. We're going to be talking with some mobile geeks, take a lot of time on the road and traveling around, and what kind of technology that involves. Of course, handhelds and portable devices and low-power things and solar panels and other mobile life geek style. During the second half of the show, we'll welcome you to join the conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can contact us right... I'll give it that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Welcome to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxel, and in the air we have a few other geeks. We have Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Hi, Sean.
Hey, good morning, Lyle.
We have Miles Elam, a Slacker geek and student. Welcome, Miles.
Good morning.
And we have two special guests from Florida and actually kind of traveling from all over the world. First, Chris Dunphy, pilot, geek, photographer, adventurer, basically a techno nomad. And Cherie Viard, technical nerd, medical industry president of VR Computer Research. Welcome.
Good morning.
Miles,
it's so good to be back.
Miles, you are up, right? Your mic's up?
Yes, it is.
I was listening to our podcast, of course you can get to by going to geekspeak.org, and I noticed that quite a bit, when you sit behind the monitor, I forget to turn your mic up. It's like, if I don't see you, you're not there kind of thing, and no one hears you. But anyway, I'm sorry for that, and I'm glad you're here today. And for our geek news, I'm going to start with you.
I was preoccupied with the fact that wireless just dropped in the office. Okay, so the One Laptop Per Child project, a wonderful project. We're trying to give laptops to developing nations so that everyone has access to
education.
Sure,
we talked about many times the idea is to just saturate the world with laptops so everybody has the digital age.
Yes, and previously I've talked about the technologies that are being introduced in this and may find its way into our laptops. One of them is the security model to the laptop. For example, there are certain technical requirements to the laptop. For example, it's intended for kids. So the idea of saying, okay, when they first get the laptop that they have to enter in a password and they can't forget it is not likely, especially if you're giving it to, like, say, a 7 or 8 year old.
Right.
So how do you get around that? The idea, what they're proposing is don't have a password at all. And what you're going to be doing with it is simply change the way you write the applications. So instead of having application can do anything that it wants, as you're writing the application, you actually say, okay, this application can access this part of the hard drive or just this file nothing else.
So the idea is to limit the scope of what the application can do, kind of like a Java runtime machine security model.
Exactly, like a sandbox.
Uh-huh. And the idea then is that anybody that picks up the computer can run anything they want, but they're actually not going to damage the core machine. You can kind of go reset and all that stuff that they did is gone.
Right. It's along the lines of, let's say you had a photo management application.
I have one of those.
Right. If Let's say there was a bug in it, where there was an exploit, someone got into it and was able to crack it.
Bad weekend.
What they would be able to have access to are your photos, but they wouldn't be able to upload it, connect up to a website. They wouldn't be able to, copy it over to a tape drive. Those are things that aren't intended for the photo application.
Right.
It wouldn't have access to, like, the mic and the sound card.
Okay, I get the idea. So you're basically, the operating system is going to start controlling, and the application developer is going to start controlling the scope of whatever application
right,
can do.
Right, a default deny. You're not allowed to do anything except for, as opposed to the current model with computers, which is you're allowed to do everything, except we're going to cut off these few things with, like, a firewall.
Right, right. All right, well, let's go on to the next story. Thank you very much, Miles, for that. Sean, do you've got a new story for us today?
I do have a new story.
Okay.
Not a lot really happened this past week.
A lot happened, but yeah, not necessarily in the tech world.
PC sales actually jumped a little bit with the launch of Vista, which I thought was interesting, especially since this is a slow period for the PC industry or computer industry as a whole. Unit sales are up 173% in retail stores.
Is this from like last month?
For the first week, over the previous week.
Okay.
So just because of Vista launch, sales are up 173%.
Because that's the only thing that really changed that week.
Yes. Compared to last year, sales were up 67%. But interest paled in comparison with launches of previous versions of Windows.
Yeah, that's a kind of a big story about this Vista thing, is that it should have been a major launch, and it should have been extremely successful, just like all the other operating systems from Microsoft coming out. And instead it's been kind of, I wouldn't say mellow, but it's definitely not the kind of excitement that we're used to. Is that because the operating system is... I mean, what do you think the factors are that's causing this? Your feeling on it, Sean. Is Vista just bad?
I don't know.
I would say it requires a much higher level of hardware, whereas people who had Windows 3.1, when they were upgrading to Windows 95, a lot of those machines could handle Windows 95, or at least a much higher percentage. And also going forward to XP. XP had more... hardware requirements, a bigger change from previous versions than Windows 3.1 to Windows 95, but it was still manageable.
Vista, I don't think it's a hardware jump. Requirement. I think it comes down to the fact that Win XP is perfectly fine for most everybody's needs, and there are no compelling reasons to upgrade to Vista.
Were the compelling reasons for the migration from 3 to 9.5 and 9.5 to 9.8? Sorry, 95 to 98? Were those compelling? Was there something real about the difference between 98 and 95, 98?
So 95 wasn't so great. 98 was a big that was really nice.
And then XP was a major change.
There was a lot of visual features.
It was stability.
It was stability. Yes.
I remember not being.
It was like a real 32-bit OS. Finally,
I remember not being very excited when XP came out. The migration from 98 to XP for me was a slow thing.
It was slow. Yeah, I recall that.
So
it wasn't as big as they were hoping it to be. But it became a great OS over time after Service Pack 2.
Are any of you recommending people buying or upgrading their current machines to Vista?
No, I'd say wait till the first service pack.
Okay. So we're holding off. The geeks are holding off on updating Vista. But if you're buying a new machine, of course, get a machine that can handle Vista and have Vista installed, Sean. Or do you want XP installed if you're buying a brand new machine?
If you're buying a new machine, there's no reason why you shouldn't get Vista.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, because they're going to guarantee it's going to work for you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take the next news story from Mr. Chris Dunphy.
Hey, the most interesting geek news of the past week for me was Apple and Steve Jobs throwing down the gauntlet around DRM.
I thought that was really interesting, definitely. Yeah. So the basic idea is that the CEO of Apple, one of the largest online music sellers. The largest online music seller, is saying we don't want digital rights management on audio files.
Yeah, he threw out this three alternatives for the future of how music should be sold, and he said the best one for the industry and for consumers and for everyone involved, artists, is to get rid of DRM entirely, which is a kind of a surprising move coming from Apple.
The idea would be then that if you went up there and you bought a song file, you could then share it with anybody. It would be no restrictions at all. There would be no restrictions to what you could do with the file. You could theoretically just give it to your aunt.
Right.
But the biggest reason, I think, I mean, what were you going to say? Please.
It's great for consumers. Because right now, you buy a song from iTunes, and you can only ever play it on an iPod. If you want to go to other stores, their music, you buy music from the Zune store, it'll only play on a Zune, and vice versa. So having music that you buy from one store can play on any device you get is a really, really big win. And a lot of people hold back from buying music because they're afraid, well, maybe someday I won't want an iPod. I'll get something else and all my music won't play anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've told my wife this before. You know, if you're going to buy music, she does a lot of theater and she's always getting music for shows. She's buying them through iTunes because, of course, it's easy and convenient. I remember one she bought through Reel. I'm like, no, don't buy through Reel. Buy at least through Apple because at least there's a Macintosh around. We know we can play it. But there's it's really frustrating, this idea that you've got to kind of take care of where your files are, so what kind of file format your stuff is saved in. Luckily, it's not a lot of money. But I agree with him. Do you think it's going to cause a lot more piracy, though? What's the idea here?
If you make it everything available, and if you want to be honest and buy it, if it's cheap and available, people, I think, for the most part, would buy it if they can get it and they know it's going to work on their devices. The music industry, of course, is responding very negative, saying that this is not the way to go. And Apple and the music industry are going to be head-to-head, and it could be just a PR move on Apple's front to get ahead of, be the champion of the people and let the music industry be the bad guy.
Well, I personally think that he's right on the mark. I think that we should have no digital rights on audio files.
Amen.
At the same time, I'm concerned about, I like the idea of artists being successful and being able to make a living on art. And so if it starts to impede that process, I'm against it. But I don't think, I think the right solution is to find a different way to make it work for artists, to produce music. There should still be incentives financially and the whole thing. And the music industry is basically not servicing their customers very well, and they're not servicing their artists very well. So I like the idea of slapping them around a little bit. Well, Cherie, do you have some news today? Okay, you was kind of surprised. First time on Geek Speak. You're forgiven. We'll talk a little bit about that stuff in a little bit. Miles, news story?
Bit of an alarming bit of news. The chairwoman of the Wikimedia Foundation, the organization behind Wikipedia, was saying that Wikipedia might disappear 3 or 4 months from now, absent a major cash infusion.
Egads, no.
In other words, they need money, and they need it fast. Now, some folks have said that, or they backpedaled a bit, saying that it's not quite that dire, but there's no doubt that the encyclopedia could use some more beneficiaries.
Right.
Or not beneficiaries, more patrons.
But they did a large funding drive a while ago. It was highly successful. Just wasn't enough?
It just wasn't enough.
Okay, so it wasn't highly successful, I guess.
Now the interesting thing is they can make a fortune if they were to put Google Ads up on the Wikipedia, but then does that really cheapen the Wikipedia experience?
Right, right.
Experience? I mean, people go there for info.
And shopping.
I want to shop. When I'm searching for Genghis Khan, I want to know, can I buy a Genghis Khan hat? Google Ads could put that there.
Genghis Khan hat?
I'm just kidding.
No, I want to see you in that hat.
I would like to keep ads out of as many websites as possible, because frankly, they really are an annoyance.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. But I would like to keep Wikipedia up. I guess we have to fork over some money. I mean, is it appropriate to pay for this kind of thing?
You can pay extra for articles with accurate information.
Yeah, why isn't the big encyclopedia houses doing some sort of... Why aren't they putting all their encyclopedias online and making them available?
Most of them are paid for, but they are, in fact, putting them online.
Yeah, Britannica's been online for years and years, and it's a great website, but it's a subscription service.
Well, which explains why no one's seen it. Just being truthful.
All right, well, thank you. I don't think Wikipedia is going anywhere. It's one of those things that it's too ingrained in society at this point for it to go anywhere soon. Too many people use it.
It's pretty well policed.
Like Gopher?
It's pretty well policed. So,
Gopher?
As far as accurate information, that used to be a concern. But it's not really a concern anymore, I don't think.
That it's going to go away?
The information's not accurate.
No, the information is definitely accurate. Miles, you're saying that the application Gopher, years ago, was as highly popular as Wikipedia?
Was more popular than the web at one time.
Yeah, but the web wasn't in existence. I mean, Gopher was used by people that were highly technical, like, I don't know, geeks. And this Wikipedia is used by everybody.
Rocks were really popular in the Stone Age, you know.
Thanks for that. All right, are we done with news for a little bit or anything else? Let's do a little bit of discussion about being a mobile geek. Chris, you have been homeless well, mobile homed for, I don't know, 2 years, a year and a half?
I've been on the road since last April, living in a little trailer, so not quite a year yet.
Okay. So, wow, it's really only been that long?
Yeah, it's only been that long.
So you stayed at my place 2 times during that time, so I thought it's been years.
Yeah, the Troxel backyard is one of the best campgrounds in Santa Cruz.
Unless it floods.
Except for the floods.
When it did flood, you had to evacuate. And we still have this video clip of you being on the news, leaving with your house. And it's like a sad story. And I'm like, no, it's not. He was visiting.
Then we see you, and you look like you belong in the Ozarks.
But you don't like
with
my
that big old beard.
Mountain man.
So, Chris, you've been traveling. You're going all over the place, plugging this thing in. But you're also doing some solar technology. Last time I talked to you, you were trying to mount an LCD. Did that go anywhere?
This last camping trip I just did in Florida, during that time I built a shelf in the front of my trailer that we've been using a 19-inch LCD on for watching movies. We've tested it out with a 24-inch big widescreen Dell that is just going to be phenomenal in there.
Are you going to buy one of those?
Thinking about it, it's like, you know, nothing like having a 16-foot trailer with a 24-inch screen.
Essential.
That's a good ratio.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, and I need to get surround sound nailed, too, in this tiny little trailer.
You don't have surround sound in there? So it's not a complete movie-watching experience.
It is
not. How many people can you fit in that trailer?
You could fit 5 for dinner if you really squeeze.
You can find out more about Chris's mobile life geek style by going to his website, Redvan.
Radvan.
Radvan.
RADVEN.net.
Of course, you can get to that by going to geekspeak.net. I actually don't know if you can right now, but
not yet.
Radvan.
Yeah.
Let's not send him to our server.
Well, it's all one.
In fact,
we
should talk about our server a little bit and just what it takes to.
That's what I've been doing for, I don't know, a week, and Miles and Sean. So
a week?
Well,
three?
I don't know. I'm talking about if I condense all the hours. That's how many hours I've actually done. We lost our server, I don't know, 2 weeks ago. The website is currently up. It's going to have content about the show up today. So it's, you know, it's there.
I love how we talk about it like it's a dead family member. Right? We lost our server last week.
Man, it is a family member. That's some good gear. But
we lost many memories, that's for sure.
The good folks at GNI Hosting have been hosting our machine pro bono because they like the show. And they've been hosting it for years now, and we've had very little trouble. We had a hard drive crash one point, but we were able to go in there and recover the machine just by sitting in there in that cold room all night. And then 2 weeks ago, the machine becomes unresponsive. Maybe 3 weeks ago. I don't even know.
3 weeks.
And we go up there and find out that it's something else, and Sean rebuilds 2 computers in an hour and a half, and Miles reinstalls operating systems, and everybody's amazing except for me just sitting there watching. And we think it's great, and it lasts for about an hour and a half, and then it's down again. And we left. Or I guess we was up for a day.
All right, we left, went home. Actually, I started copying mail that night and never finished. That's when it went down.
So
but,
then,
you know, I really want to give kudos to G&I. Those guys are just amazing.
Yeah, if you're looking
they've
for
been
a
so
hosting location
good to us.
In San Jose, great company, G&I Hosting, you can get to them. Their servers
I love the
up.
Signs. Don't look at the little laser lights in the...
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of fiber optic everywhere, and you got to be careful where you look. It really is a high-class facility.
You know, it used to be that when the machine dropped for a little while, I'd be freaking out, and I'd try GNIHosting.com to see, you know, are they up? And they're always up. Like, they never have problems. It's always our machine. So that's a good recommendation, I guess.
Yeah, we've had the site go down before because of hosting, and GNI is just...
Not at GNI, yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, well, let's see. If GNI is down, then Time Warner's down, and Sprint's down.
that's
and
a good point.
They have so many big accounts.
Good, yeah, definitely. Well, so we went there, we rebuilt again. Sean, you took a new server there, and we've been working on virtualization, server as a virtualization using Ubuntu Linux. So we're using Ubuntu Linux. We used to run Red Hat, and it's been a learning experience. I would say that in the last couple of days, yesterday I started giggling because at my workstation I had 2 screens up with a whole bunch of terminals, and all this HTOP was running, which is an application that shows you all the processes on the machine. It's really cool looking. And I giggled because I felt cool, and then I realized, like, reflective, that I'm cool in that completely nerdy way. You know, I can manage multiple tasks. And I was like, I'm like in the Matrix. And I'm like, oh, wait, no, I'm a sad little geek. So it was a good experience for me. in any case, the server's
tank.
Server's up, and it'll get more reliable as time goes on. If you'd like to call with questions and comments today, you can't do email right now because we don't have the website's contact form, but you can call us, and I'll give it that information in just a little bit to ask questions of technology. Miles?
One thing I did want to talk about is the fact that we've always preached make backups, and not only did we not have that many current backups, like we totally dropped the ball on that one, so the shoemaker's children go barefoot, but... at the same time, there's another aspect to backups that we hadn't really talked about that much, which is actually the recovery portion of it. How often have you actually tried your backups, tested them, and done that recovery portion? How long is it going to take you to bring it back up again?
Right.
And that really bit us this last time. The fact that, yes, even if we had the data, we still hadn't gone through the motions of actually restoring that data onto a server and getting it up and running.
This is comparable to, you know, you lose your machine, you've got a backup of all your data, you start installing, and you go, wait, where's my Windows disk? And you don't have your Windows XP disk for some reason. And so now it's like, oh, I can't do that. So then you have to go get that, and then you're installing and everything, and you're like, wait, I want Eudora. Oh, I don't have where's the purchase license for Eudora? And the whole, that kind of chain of events that happens when you lose a drive, that's what you're talking about. That's what we've had to deal with.
It's akin to, let's say you're running a business, and you have all your receipts, you make a copy of all your receipts just in case one of them goes up in flames or whatever, but you don't actually organize them. You just toss them into a box, and then when you have to do tax time, it's actually going through and sifting, going, wait, how do I do this? I'm putting them in order, and yeah, it's...
But I have to say that I'm very happy with apt-get on Ubuntu and Debian. Wonderful little application that helps to install
Aptitude,
them.
Yeah.
Aptitude's the real name of the application, which I found it just the other day when you were doing it. Anyway, we won't get into
any
more
application?
Of that.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It allows for easily installing and uninstalling applications on a Linux system.
For loose definitions of easy.
Okay.
Okay.
What are
we talking
about? Apt-get installed.
Let's get out of the Linux quagmire. I've been in it for a week. All right. So let's let's talk about medical devices, because we have Cherie. She's a president. I think this is the first time we've had a president in the air room. Normally, presidents call us for the phones. So Cherie, the company that you manage. Was started by your father in 70-something?
He started in 1978 in the Wang 2200 era.
Okay, and what do you guys produce?
Right now we're doing custom application development, mainly in the healthcare industry. We do a lot of resource management. We do case management, physician management, scheduling. We create a wide range of very secure applications that run on the web, that link in, like rural hospitals.
Isn't it really hard to develop in the medical industry because you have so many regulations?
There are a lot of regulations. You really have to be up on what the latest HIPAA regulations are and what ones are being watched.
What does HIPAA mean?
HIPAA, it is came out in 1996. It's a set of regulations that protect patient privacy and also enforce electronic standards between insurance companies and medical facilities for billing.
This is making sure that your giant collection of medical data doesn't go into the wrong hands.
Correct.
Is that a hard process, or is it just time-consuming?
It's time-consuming to keep up with all of the regulations, but most of it is proving that you had good intents, because the main risks are liability claims.
So your basic idea is you're managing liability.
Right.
Okay, but what about the integrity of the medical information? Like, as in, if your system is being used by a hospital, which I go to, is my information safe?
Hopefully. Hopefully they had good intents to keep it safe. But they utilize high encryption ways of transferring. Most of the information that comes to and from us and our clients has to go through very high encryption and decryption there and out.
Do you code yourself?
I do some coding, but primarily I'm a project manager. I go into the facilities, learn the business models and the overall architecture, and learn how to integrate in.
Sure.
And then I learn how to integrate in technology.
So this, I think, also is a first for a medical computer developer on GeekSpeak. So if you want to call in with questions about that. Chris?
I just want to, we've been nomading together for a bit and experimenting. We did 12 days in a Florida state park. She was running her company from a table in a campground with an owl over her head on a tree.
A real owl?
A real one.
Yeah, connected wirelessly via EVDO with two monitors actually set up out on the table.
Are you powering this?
Well, sometimes solar panels. In this case, the campground had power. Just seeing her in the woods with two monitors and the mobile phone, and as a booster antenna, we had the cooler on top of the table and the trash can on top of that to get the cell phone high enough to get a good signal. And that was how she was running the company. It's quite impressive.
So we're getting a weak signal. So I actually, on the time when I had a strong enough signal, I went on and bought a booster, an actual booster, and had a FedEx delivery to the campsite.
And did that work?
Yes, it worked. It actually, they delivered it to the ranger, and he came up the next morning and handed me my package. And it was like, you know, receiving water in the desert to get my internet connection.
This sounds like science fiction to some degree. You know, people running their businesses from anywhere. I mean, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I like that you're using dual monitors. I can't live without dual monitors. It's so frustrating.
That was so essential for me when I was shopping for a laptop, is one that supported dual monitors natively.
Yeah, I think it's a crucial thing. If you haven't had two monitors on your computer, that's the geeky way to do your thing. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. Right now, we're taking your calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers, get ready, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'm going to do that again, nice and slow, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can use the internet. Visit geekspeak.org. Oh, and you can't. That's right. So if you want to send us an email, call instead. The phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
KUSP co-sponsors the National Steinbeck Center's presentation of The Big Read as Monterey County reads The Grapes of Wrath, February 24th through March 31st. Celebrate John Steinbeck's Pulitzer Prize-winning novel at more than 40 events countrywide. Enjoy dance, film, book clubs, drama, and exhibits at museums, libraries, bookstores, and colleges. Most events are free. Call 775-4721 for your free reader's guide. That's 775-4721 or visit online at steinbeck.org.
Don't forget to stay tuned for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. Thank you, Miles, very much for that. I want to also let everyone know that GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. We are taking your calls on GeekSpeak right now. You're welcome to call up. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to GeekSpeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. The Geeks this morning, Chris Dumphy, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and special guest, first time on GeekSpeak, Cherie V. Ard. Welcome, Geeks. Thanks for being here, and let's start taking some calls from people that, I guess, need our help, or at least that's what I hear. So let's see. Dan. Man, I don't have my buttons pushed. Hi, Dan. Welcome to GeekSpeak. Dan, are you there?
Hello. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Hey, Dan, where are you calling from?
Santa Cruz.
Great. What's your question today?
I just recently got a laptop computer with Windows XP, and I'm wondering if you can recommend any software to encrypt data on a hard drive in case I ever lose it or it gets stolen.
It's a very good idea, planning for it being stolen or dropped out of a moving car or something. It's a good idea. Geeks, you have a good solution for Windows XP for making sure the data's safe. What is this information? Is it images or is it like, you know, medical data or just everything?
Just everything. You know, I have Quicken and with all my financial data in there and everything else.
Okay, I personally don't have encryption solutions on Windows. Geeks, any of you use Windows encryption technology?
Actually, in XP, if you have XP Pro, there is encryption you could turn on for your personal account. That is in the the options.
You mentioned like you've never tried it.
I have used it, actually. And where it kind of bit me was when I had a computer crash and I had my encrypted hard drive, I couldn't get into it anymore, and I had to lose the data on the encrypted hard drive. So if you do have an encrypted hard drive, make sure you have a nice secure backup someplace.
Okay.
Yeah. It also depends on what type of encryption you want. If you want it just file by file, then the Windows built-in encryption will work just fine. If you're looking for an entire volume to hide it, you're going to need third-party software, like, for example, TrueCrypt.
And that's kind of what you want to do, right? You want to have an entire drive or space on a drive that's dedicated to encryption.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I think that's I like your idea, Miles. I don't think you should use the XP solution.
Well, the XP, you'd have all your user accounts turned into encrypted, which is actually pretty cool.
But your situation where you're stuck in, well, I guess the other thing you're going to be stuck with TrueCrypt too. Miles, what are you going to say?
What I was going to say is that with the Windows built-in one, it's each individual file, you know which files are there and
sure.
on how many files.
True,
with
very
TrueCrypt,
true.
You have no idea what's on the drive, if anything is
yeah,
there.
Yeah, excellent. Good choice.
Something else you might want to think about doing is putting a password on your BIOS.
That's a good idea.
So when you first turn your machine on, you'd see a password right away before you could even boot the OS.
But man, I like that idea. That means so someone couldn't throw Ubuntu CD in there.
They could pull the hard drive out.
Yeah, they could pull
that
out.
And possibly get the data off that way. Encryption is very CPU intensive,
I think one of the crucial things, too, is on your laptop, actually on the laptop itself, like on the bottom, put a sticker that says your name on it and your phone number, because it's very likely that a person will, you know, attempt to contact you if they find it. But if you don't have information that's easy to find on it, it's less likely you'll be contacted. So TrueCrypt, Miles, you're recommending that. Is that a paid-for application?
No, it's free.
Okay.
It's free to use.
By the way, Dan.
Sean, about the CPU usage, it's actually not so bad anymore. Especially
It depends on what bit level you're encrypting your data at.
Right. And especially with modern CPUs, so considering how slow hard drives are in comparison, it's usually not so bad.
And basically what happens is the drive gets mounted and gets put into memory space. I mean, the data you're accessing gets put into memory space unencrypted. And then as you're working on it, the one question I have though in that situation, if you're not using an XP solution, isn't your paging file unencrypted and has a lot of information in it?
That can be an issue, yeah.
Okay, so you want to set up Windows XP to when it shuts down to purge that data.
Right.
Which is going to be slower boot up time.
And one other thing to consider is on the Windows Vista front, if you ever upgrade to Vista, if you get Vista Ultimate, that has a feature I think called BitLocker built into it that is really, really high-grade hard drive security. That is only in Vista Ultimate, though.
Okay. All right, Dan, there you go. So TrueCrypt, we recommend. And if you want to wait a little while and start doing Vista Vista Ultimate, the most expensive version of Vista, that's another solution for you. Good luck with your encrypting needs.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you so much for the call.
Bye-bye.
And from Carmel Valley, which we don't get calls from very often, which I really appreciate. Kay, what's your question today?
Hi. I was given a laptop, and it had Service Pack 1 on it, but not 2. I wanted to update because Windows Explorer was just crashing and obviously having problems. But every time I researched it, there was all this stuff that I should do to prepare.
Yeah.
You know, I made the disk of the BIOS and did a whole bunch of stuff in preparation for it, but I'm afraid to actually do it because I'm still at the point where I can't have my computer crash.
Right.
And what is necessary and what isn't? And is it going to help my Windows Explorer?
How much? Do you have a lot of hard drive space on this laptop, or are you running out of hard drive space?
I have 32 megabytes. Is that right?
I'm
understanding about 65% of what you guys say.
Okay. It sounds like very little data. That sounds like memory,
yeah.
And it sounds like very little memory. If you're running XP, though, that's probably incorrect. What you want to do is make sure you've got enough space on your hard drive before you start doing what we would recommend doing. But with a laptop, Geeks, what do you think she should do here? She can't be down on her machine, and she needs to upgrade to Service Pack 2. What should she do? Not upgrade because it's too dangerous?
That's tough.
I think what you should do, first off, do you have a backup of your data?
Okay.
Do you have a backup of your data?
The CD, it does have a floppy also, but, you know, that's limited for space.
No.
And the CD doesn't work.
Yeah. Okay, so what you need to do, unfortunately, is you need to, at some point this machine is going to be completely unavailable to you. It's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be prepared for that to happen, and that's why you need a backup.
Okay.
So you should probably get, like, an external device with a USB connector.
External hard drives are really cheap and really great for this.
So first thing you should do is buy an external hard drive, USB, external hard drive.
I have a little tiny...
fob, like a little stick, something?
Yeah.
Yeah. So get a larger drive, go into My Documents on your computer, and copy everything in there over to your over the new drive. If the new drive, you can find something with a backup utility, use that, because it will actually copy everything you need.
Okay.
That's your first step, and I would do that before anything else. Your second step on trying to upgrade to XP Service Pack 2, you want to make sure that that list of stuff that Microsoft suggests, like having enough space on your drive and everything, you have those things true. If you don't, I wouldn't attempt it.
So how do I create, you know, there are some programs on here that it was an attorney that gave it to me, and he's got programs. Are they going to uninstall enough?
They're going to still be there when you upgrade to XP, Service Pack 2. They'll still be there as long as everything goes successful for you. There's enough space. The thing I'd be most concerned about is having enough space on your computer.
So what you want to do is go to My Computer and open it up, and you'll see the various drive letters.
Wait, your computer or her computer?
My computer on the Windows XP desktop.
Okay.
Open that up so you see your drive letters, and you'll see your local disk, which is Drive C.
Yeah.
If you right-click on it and select Properties, you'll be able to do the disk cleanup feature.
Oh, I've done that. It's never completed it, and it won't run on scheduled maintenance.
Okay, so then you want to go back into properties again, and you want to go to tools, and you want to do a error checking. Do a check now and have it.
You did that
and it
too.
Says there's no problem.
Yeah, I think you should, if you're really concerned about this, I think you should take it into a professional because it's going to be hard to do and you're having troubles at a point. Do you have like a geek friend that can help you out? And do you have any skills like, I don't know, cooking or car repair, something that a geek might not know how to do?
Probably. I haven't made it enough of a priority because...
Well, if the machine can't go down for you and it's really concerned for you, then it is a priority in your life. Mm-hmm. It's going to go down eventually. You might as well prepare for it now by, like, doing some, you know, whatever your talent and skill is, do that in trade for a geek coming over to help you out. And I think that's the way I'd recommend doing it at this point.
Okay.
And good luck, Kay.
That's a good. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks for the call.
Take care.
If you'd like to call in, you're welcome to do so. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. That's a lot of numbers when I just read it like that. You know, I've been saying it for 6 or 7 years, so I haven't memorized, but I'll do it nice and slow. 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-KUSP. Or you can call us in the 831 area code at 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. And we do have some calls online we're going to go ahead and go to right now. Santa Cruz, John Paul, what's your question today for us?
Hi. I've installed Ubuntu on my laptop, and I was hoping to actually transfer over and basically use that as a desktop alternative. But the two things that I've come against, I've been setting up a roaming wireless connection and getting my iPod up on it. And I was just wondering if you have any suggestions.
Getting the iPod on it. Does Apple have an iTunes solution for Linux?
They do not, as far as I know.
Miles, have you heard anybody doing this?
Syncing up their iPod, yes. I don't know anything off the top of my head, though. I don't have an iPod, and I don't do it, so I haven't had any reason to try it out myself.
Dude, I really highly recommend an iPod. Miles, it's a really good... you gave me one. Remember the one you gave? That was nice.
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you.
I use my phone, so, I mean, it's...
Okay, so the biggest problem is going to be your link to your iTunes. So
you can't just mount it as a USB device?
You can to get the files off.
But you can't do the music that way because the music's in kind of an obfuscated file system. So you need something that will sync to that obfuscated file system. There is a sync for Linux. I'm sure that there's one that's probably already ready-made for Ubuntu. Just Google Ubuntu iPod sync, you'll find it. I know it's out there. I was reading about it like 2 or 3 days ago, and I just don't remember the name.
Ah, here we go. I went to a Google search looking for iPod and Ubuntu, and I got a link to an article that says how to use an iPod with Ubuntu.
Okay, we should add it to the site. Indeed, he's also saying there's a lot of software that does this. And GTK Pod does this. So you do have some software solutions for iTunes. And we'll add that to the site. Miles, does that article look like a good way to go?
It looks like a step-by-step.
Okay, can we add that to the GeekSpeak website?
Sure.
Great. And your second question, I can't recall now, John Paul. What was the first issue?
Wireless.
Wireless.
Roaming wireless. And I've done some searches on it, and a lot of them just... came to the point where they had said, well, wireless is tricky, and then they would kind of talk about it, but it wasn't necessarily a great solution.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to have any other better solutions than to look around, try to find somebody else that's doing it and see what they're doing. I haven't done Ubuntu on a laptop to try to make it as my main OS. I'm so glad that people are doing this, but unfortunately you're kind of a pioneer, an early adopter. I think that it's going to become more popular to do this, and...
Okay.
I hope that you're sharing the knowledge that you gain as you learn how to do it any way you can by putting it online.
Cool. Well, as I figure it out, I'll try.
Thank you so much, John Paul, for doing it, and good luck on your Linux adventure.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Ubuntu is a free operating system compared to a paid-for, which is Microsoft's Windows suites and Apple's OS X. And Ubuntu Linux is a great version of that has a really wonderful interface. You install it. We talk a bit on the show because it seems to be if people were to stop using a paid application as their operating system, they started getting a free one, Ubuntu seems to be the top on the list in a lot of people's minds for a desktop replacement. You install it and you can open Word and Excel documents right out of the box. You don't have to buy Microsoft's Office suite because built into Ubuntu when you install it, you have a free Office suite. So there's a lot of perks for it, and it seems to be simple. And so people seem to be moving to Ubuntu. Now there's problems with wireless and iPods that people are solving, and John Paul is one of those people that is trying to make it work because it seems to make sense. And we'll get into that some other show about why that makes sense, but let's go ahead and start taking some more calls. We're going to go to Monterey. Oh, I'm sorry. Seaside. Maurice, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello.
Hello, Maurice. What's your question today?
I have an email from Apple saying, inviting me to go beyond Vista. If I'm going to upgrade to Vista, I'm going to need a new computer, which is definitely the case. And they suggest instead of going with a whole new Wintel system to just get a Mac. And it makes some sense to me. I'm wondering what your opinions are.
Anybody?
I switched to Mac this year. I'm really happy making the switch.
Yeah, I like Macs myself. I'm using a Mac right now.
Sean hasn't.
I like my bank account with money in it.
Yeah, my. Oh, you're talking about because they're more expensive?
You can get some good price Macs.
I'm not going to spend money on a Mac. And I've, you know, I'm firmly entrenched in the PC world, and it does everything I need to get done.
Maurice, are you gaming?
No, I play no games whatsoever.
Okay, and you're wondering to buy a new computer, whether you want to get a Vista machine or you want to get a Mac.
Yes, I have a Windows machine that's about 5 years old now.
Are you comfortable in a Windows environment?
Very. I'm rather well-versed in it, and I get along rather well.
Vista.
This is a Pentium 4. When I bought it 5 years ago, I put a gigabyte of RAM in it. And I'm pretty... I guess I will be a journeyman with computers in general because I used to work with them. I'm disabled now. But
so what about applications? Do you own a bunch?
That
you use?
Yeah.
So that's something else you need to consider.
Yeah, I think if you're a practice Windows user and you have a lot of applications and the only reason you think about switching is because you don't want to buy Vista, I don't think it's a good enough reason for you. But since if you're going to buy a new computer, I mean, what I would do is if you've got someone that knows a Macintosh, go spend some time in front of it and let them try to convince you. You'll have frustrations right away. You'll be like, well, how do I do this? And it'll be a confusing experience. If someone's there with you, it might be less so. But I think that you'll probably find yourself that you're pretty comfortable in a Windows machine.
Well, one thing is I spend a lot of time with the schedule tasks function. In fact, my system uses schedule tasks a lot. And I'm curious as to whether there's something equivalent.
There is, but you're going to have to set it all up again. There are, but you're going to have to set it all up again. So
well, that would be okay.
It sounds like you're
mind.
Kind of a power user on Windows. I would definitely play with a Mac before you decide to buy one. And I'd play with it for a day if you can. You know, if you know someone who can actually loan you something for a while, that would be a good experience for you. I've migrated between Macs and Windows all my life. Right now I have both. They use different purposes in my life. For my everyday machine, it's a Macintosh.
But when you need to get real work done, what do you use?
Yeah, a Windows machine.
Yeah, one thing to with regard to the scheduler, the scheduled tasks, if he gets a new machine that has Vista on, he's going to migrate it as well.
Yeah, that's true.
So. I see. Okay. Well, I have about 30 tasks that run at various times during the week.
You're a busy guy.
It takes care of all my backing up and my regular system.
Well, you know, you might not. I think that you sound like kind of like a geek, and you could probably make the switch. It's just a little bit of a paradigm shift and depends on whether you can do that. And if you can do that, I think you're going to enjoy a Macintosh quite a bit because you're going to be able to hack it and set up cron jobs and do anything you want to do.
And one other nice thing, the new Macs can actually run Windows. I use Parallels and run all my old Windows apps, and so that I don't really miss having a Windows machine because I still have my favorite Windows apps running just great on the Mac.
Except for games. Maurice, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Even games run great.
Really?
Yeah, if you run it in boot camp and reboot and dual boot, then you could run games as good as any Windows machine.
We had a call from Sunnyvale. David.
Well, not DirectX.
Not DirectX, no.
No, DirectX games.
Oh, no, he's talking about rebooting.
When you reboot. That's awesome.
It's just not a very good graphics card compared to a Windows machine, but it's it'd be a normal Windows machine.
That's true.
Sunnyvale, David called, asked us about Unix and OpenSolaris. We didn't go with OpenSolaris. Is OpenSolaris now open source, Miles?
Yes, it is.
And why did we go with Ubuntu server for our server solution?
Because I haven't used OpenSolaris at all.
Yeah. And Ubuntu is based on Debian, and we were using Debian before. I misspoke that their old machine was Red Hat. It actually was a Debian machine.
Right. I haven't even really been on a Solaris box in years. The last time I was installing and uninstalling and managing software was a lot harder in it than it is with Debian. So that was the main reason. But Solaris 10, from what I've heard, has some really good features. If you're curious about it, I do recommend people trying it out.
All right. I think what we did is we went with something that we felt would be the easiest and regretted it the entire time. No, not really. Monterey Ethan, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question for Monterey?
I'm on XP Home. I have an external USB hard drive. I'd like to know if you need a way to back up my documents folder and my email.
For like one-click button kind of thing?
Preferably.
And the hard drive doesn't come with any software?
Nope.
Okay, geeks, anybody have a good Windows, like one click, you set it up and it goes it over and it's nice and free?
Well, not free, but I've been using Handy Backup for many years and it works excellent because you just set it up as a task and it just runs seamlessly in the background for me. I don't even think about it.
Okay, so, and that's called what, Handy Backup?
Handy Backup.
So there's a good recommendation from a geek using something already. I know there's some free solutions for this. I don't have any names on the top of my head. But I would go ahead and go for it. I mean, it's under $100, right?
Oh, it's like $40 or something. It was cheap.
Okay, so there's, you know, a price range that it's probably comparable to your time involved in trying to figure out to do it free. And I think I'd probably go with that if you want to make it simple.
Okay, sounds good. And then do you tell it which folders you'd like to be backed up?
Yes, you can set up all sorts of, like I've got several set up, so it backs up my documents on a, like a nightly basis, but other folders I back up maybe once or twice a week to my external hard drive.
Sri, you're cool, so on top of it. Thank you very much for the call.
Specify, does anyone happen to know, is it the .pst folder in Outlook, which contains all your mail?
It is, and when you copy it, make sure Outlook's turned off.
Okay, good tip. And can I ask one more question?
Please.
Anyone happen to know, I was told that Windows machines can only use so much RAM. You can overload your machine and you bought more RAM than it's capable of.
So you want to know the maximum amount of RAM? The maximum amount of RAM for Windows XP Home?
Yeah.
Please. Well, 4 gigs because it's a 32-bit OS, but because of WinXP system resources overhead and the lack of a BIOS to really see all 4 gigs. I guess that's the first issue. So usually you only see about maybe 3.2, 3.4 gigs because of the BIOS. Even when it says 4 gigs, you don't see 3. You don't see 4, you see less than that. There are actually BIOS hacks that people are using to make this work.
But if he puts more RAM into it, it doesn't do anything for you, right?
I'm seeing about 2.75. is all you're really going to be using.
So
if you put 4 gigs in your system.
Would you recommend only putting 2 gigs in then?
With XP 32-bit.
And would you recommend only putting in...
2.5
gigs is the max you want to be able to put in a machine.
I mean, it just seems like you're wasting money otherwise.
Yeah.
If you really want to use memory, go to a 64-bit OS, and then you don't have any issue.
You have a lot of other issues.
16 gigs as long as you can afford it.
Which operating systems are 64?
Windows XP has a 64-bit version. But
you have to get the hardware for it.
But just keep in mind, there's a lot of printer manufacturers, scanner manufacturers, they just don't write drivers for 64-bit. So you need to make sure that all the hardware that you have has drivers available for 64-bit.
I would just have 2.5 gigs in your machine and not anything else.
Actually, if you're going to be buying a new 64-bit operating system, it would be better probably to go with Vista.
Probably.
Yeah, that's where all the driver development is going to be going.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the only problem you're going to have in Vista migration is like that old laser printer. Like, is it going to have drivers or not? Ever, really. Right. And that's scanners, old laser printers. There's a lot of peripherals. If you've had it for a long time, when you migrate to Vista, you might have some problems. But that's true. It's a 64, you know, you get the 64-bit version and you're going to be sitting pretty.
Usually 2 gigs is plenty for XP. Yeah. What are you doing exactly?
It's my work computer, and I have a bunch of client graphics and my documents that need to be backed up. And then, of course, my mails go back years, and I use them as reference.
Yeah,
2 gigs is plenty for
that stuff. Doesn't take
you know, RAM, I've got one friend who needs more than 2 gigs, and that's because he's an artist. He writes music. He's got these huge music files with lots of samples. That actually take up memory. Other than that, or if you're a heavy Adobe user and you're using your Photoshop with lots of layers and you're doing filtering.
But if you put more than...
But otherwise, I don't know why you would need more than 2.
I do actually render a lot of graphics, and I thought it's my processor that slows everything down.
It's RAM too. I mean, but if you've got 2 gigs, I don't think you've got a problem.
Just make get a faster hard drive, put your scratch file on that.
Yeah,
just make sure your scratch file's on a separate hard drive. Then
do you understand what that means, Ethan?
This is a good tip
for everybody. If you've got 2 hard drives in your computer, you want your operating system and your application on 1 hard drive, and you want Photoshop set up. If you go into Preferences of Photoshop, it has a scratch disk. You want to set that up in a different drive, as long as that drive is fast.
Install it on a different drive.
No. You install it on the main drive, and then in the Preferences of Photoshop, you say where your scratch disk is. It's a preference, and you choose a different drive for the scratch disk. But you want to make sure that scratch disk drive is fast.
Interesting. How does that make it faster?
When Photoshop does all these filter, the layer stacks in Photoshop and all the filters, and it keeps a memory history and all that stuff actually has to be written to the hard drive because it can't keep all that memory. So that writing to the hard drive to save all information about the about the file is being saved open and closed all the time. And so you want that to be on a system. And then, of course, the computer itself is controlling your mouse and it's controlling all this other stuff that's going on in your computer. And that has some hard drive access too. So if you separate the two, Photoshop can do its hard drive access without affecting the rest of the computer. And you've got some kind of, just segregation, which is actually a good term in a software sense.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, good tip. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Thank you for the call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
We're going to Santa Cruz. Bill, welcome to Geek Speak. What's your question today? Bill, did I surprise you? Well, maybe someone else is on the line. And, okay, I'm going to hang up on that. Let's go ahead and go to Charles. Charles, where are you calling from?
Thank you. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you so much. Where are you calling from, Charles?
I'm calling from my car going up to San Mateo.
I'd like you to stop if you're – I don't want you to be driving while you're on the air.
Okay.
So you can call back if you stop, okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Can you get my question out there, or at least about how I can find that program?
I'll address the information I have, but unfortunately, we can't take people that are driving. It's not very safe for the roads.
It's raining.
Especially when it's raining. Charles' question we did pick up at some point about Sony, a program from Sony, Moving Shaker. Movie Shaker? Anybody know Movie Shaker? We're silent on it. We didn't fit the whole question, unfortunately. Oh, well, maybe next time. Let's take the last call of the day from Watsonville. Judith, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm calling. Since I did an archive and reinstall on my iBook G4, I've been having just some weird things going on. And I'm thinking about going through and doing clean the whole thing and install Panther and then upgrade to Tiger. And I'm wondering, does reinstalling the system like that, is that hard on the hard drive at all? Or?
Well, it uses every resource on the computer. You don't have to actually reinstall by installing Tiger or Panther and then Tiger. Your Tiger disk will install on that computer.
What?
Your Tiger disk, if you wipe the computer, will install the new operating system on that computer. You don't have to do an upgrade path. So.
But I want to have all the stuff, all the stuff from.
Are you currently running Panther?
No, but some of the stuff from, isn't there some of the programs from like the classic or the OS 9 that
you want to keep OS 9 running?
Yeah.
Okay.
Be able to have that if I want to have that and some of the things like the World Book that I got with it.
I don't think you should reinstall to get your machine. I don't think you should reinstall the operating system to do this because it's going to be too many steps. It's not going to be worth it necessarily. But unfortunately, we're running out of time on GeekSpeak, and that's all I can answer for this call.
Okay.
But call back. You are a frequent caller. Please do call back. Thank you for the call.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening to GeekSpeak. We enjoy doing it. I hope you enjoy listening to it. GeekSpeak is registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio KOSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Ardo, on the web at kosp.org.